We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode of Inside Golf Podcast is brought to you by The Rabbit Hole. Another week, 5X a field on my 6 of 6 rate could mean absolutely nothing, but could be something. The point is, another week, another sweat, and I was able to formulate such a strong model and such a strong player pool based on the data that I use from The Rabbit Hole. We are the most comprehensive and customizable statistical golf database on the internet, the database for the ball knowers. Great week for the ball knowers. And if you want to check out my model, make your own models, deep dive any golf statistic, you can head on over to betspurtsgolf.com. Sign up today using code INSIDEGOLF for 25% off. That's right, 25% off on a product that is already the lowest price on the market. Couple rumors that price might be going up the week of the Masters, so I would lock it in for the year now. It is comically inexpensive at the moment, and we are adding things every single week. Just added wind data last week. I think our next edition will make people very happy as well. And if you lock in the price now, you're good with that price. So as we keep adding and adding to it, I would recommend you grab it now. So betspurtsgolf.com, promo code INSIDEGOLF for 25% off weekly, monthly, yearly, 25% off whichever option you want to choose. All right. Valspar podcast. I'm in Mexico. It's delightful. I just played some golf this morning and got back and watched a lot of players in the afternoon. Did not have Golf Channel on the TV. No Golf Channel in Mexico, apparently. So I kind of had to watch on my computer screen while I was multitasking preparing for this podcast, but I watched a lot of it. It was the first, mainly because I was financially, had a lot of financial interest going on today for the first time in, I think, 3 years of doing content for the players that I really had a good players thus far. Could be a great player. I think I'm guaranteed something good at least based on all the matchups and stuff we did cashing on Friday night, but could be a great players tomorrow. Now, a couple things brutally wrong as well. We'll get to Justin Thomas. Corey Connors and Nick Taylor going backwards today was certainly not ideal. But Rory was 4%. In some of the contests I played. Kobe, part of the ball knowers crew at RPS, has Rory Sander Fitz, all low-owned everywhere. He just keeps absolutely cleaning up the high-stakes head-to-head stuff. The Scheffler, Connors, Harmon, Siwoo core still has a great chance for me, even after a disappointing big day for Connors. Harmon has been electric. Big T has some runners. We talked all about Harmon running it back for us in that Wednesday night show that we did. So it's good to have some good vibes at this tournament. It was pretty brutal for me the last couple of years at the Players, particularly. I really remember the last 2 years. Didn't have a good Players. And I had a good API, but I had a really poor Honda and a decently poor Mexico as well. Mexico and Honda were, you know, my first two bad weeks of the season, particularly Honda. And then we rebounded a little bit with API, but get to see the ball go through the hoop again on a golf course that, you know, can be pretty challenging to predict at times. The Xander outright, and full disclosure here, yes, there were a bunch of statistical reasons why I bet Xander, as there are every single week with Xander Schauffele. Doesn't mean you just bet the guy every single week because he makes sense on paper, right? We know that Xander isn't always the best finisher. I could statistically poke some holes through some of that stuff with, if you dive into the pressure tool stuff on Data Golf, but I mean, at the same time, for the player that he is, I'm not going to go out and call Xander a killer. I'm not going to go out and call Xander that I trust in a vacuum just heading into tomorrow. If we look at the top three of Harmon, Wyndham, Xander, Xander has the most wins of those three on the PGA Tour and is the youngest. He might be the same age of Wyndham. I think he's the youngest. And yet he still feels like the one that you're the most nervous about, right? Because Wyndham's won two elevated events in a major in the last 8 months. Brian Harmon won a major by five strokes in the last couple of months, right? But the reason, and great bets, by the way, I really overlooked Wyndham, and I have talked a lot about Wyndham on this podcast earlier in the season. I said a bunch of times, like, this guy's way, way undervalued based on what my numbers are seeing. Wyndham's really good. He's here to stay. He's at worst a top 20 player on the PGA Tour, and I was completely underselling him there. But I got the big 90-1 win at Pebble, and I kind of said, okay, thank you, Wyndham. I'm going to hop off now. You were incredibly kind to me at Pebble Beach, and I think our work here is done. That was a huge mistake. That was a massive mistake. I've overlooked him now the past 2 weeks, and his betting number, both at the API and this past week at Sawgrass, way too high. Way too high for what he should have been. And then Harmon also, you know, talked a lot about him in DFS and played a lot of him in that, but, you know, those guys holding a 150-1 Harmon ticket from Sunday night, pretty damn good. Shout out to Brian Kirshner as well. I just want to give him a shout out for having the top three. He has all three of them, Xander, Harmon, and Wyndham Clark. So great card for my good buddy Brian Kirshner this week as well. Back to Xander. I talked about this with Jeff on the Odds Checker show that we do every Mondays. You can check that out on the Odds Checker YouTube channel. It's actually really fun. I know a lot of, you know, the stuff that I do for RPS, obviously, you know, this podcast is always free, but a lot of the other betting stuff that I do for RPS is at RPS in the Discord behind the paywall. If you're looking just for some fun, free, breezy, lighthearted, 20 minutes per week content, me and Jeff do an Odds Checker video every single week where I basically talk through my entire outright card. Jeff does as well. It's actually really fun. It's one of my most fun things to record every week. And I post this theory to Jeff, and I just tweeted this as well before I hit record on this podcast, that Xander is just mid-2010s Ricky. And that isn't a shot by any means at either of the two. I think people forget how good Ricky Fowler was from like 2010 to 2019. That decade for Ricky, 48 top fives, 8 wins. Xander, last 8 years, 42 top fives, 8 wins. So, you know, I think Xander has the ability to be a little bit better than Ricky over a 10-year period. If he gets 6 more top fives in the next 2 years and another win or two, But people forget how good Ricky was. Ricky finished top five in every single major in 2014. Okay, Ricky showed up in majors a ton. He was highly relevant in a lot of 2010s majors, but never could really get there. And then he won tons of events like Phoenix and Honda, and that's exactly what Xander is doing, right? And it turns out Ricky getting that Players' Championship win in 2015 is probably going to be the major crowning achievement of his career. You know, if Ricky does end up winning a major in his mid-30s, which I think is unlikely, you can go back and clip this. But I think it's going to be that 2015 Players for Ricky. Yet at the time when he won it, it was like, okay, he finally kind of got a big one. The Players in 2015, I think, held a lot more regard than it was held in a much higher regard than it is now. You know, that was the best field in golf, really, the deepest field in golf back when we had all the best players playing on mainly the same tour. And so after Ricky won that 2015 Players, you know, finally, this is that next step. Now he's ready to win majors, and it just never happened. It just, you know, it just turned out that, you know, that's it for Ricky of Players. And that feels like a very likely Xander career arc to me. Tons of relevant finishes in majors, get the Players win, and then continue to tease us in majors for the next decade. That would kind of be my prediction for Xander's career. Like I said, I think he's a little bit better than Ricky from a talent perspective. But if you're setting the over-under, and I know everybody wants to go crazy high with these majors. That's why I do a podcast with Kyle Porter on this every single year, just checking in on what the major over-unders for these guys should be. I mean, we were having Scotty 5-6 major conversations like just after he had one great putting week at Bay Hill. So I think with somebody like Xander, who is right now Data's Golf's second best player in the world, at least statistically, maybe he gets a major, but probably set the major over under when we did this in October. And I don't feel Xander's had an excellent start to the season. He's actually really showed up this season across the board in ways that Cantlay hasn't, in ways that Hovland hasn't, in ways that a lot of the better players haven't, right? Spieth, even Homa, Morikawa. Xander has been better than all of those guys. I'm still putting his major over-unders at 0.5. I just think it's really hard to win majors. So do I think a very likely outcome to Xander's career is win a Players, hopefully this Players, and then contend in a bunch more majors and maybe get zero, maybe get one? I mean, that's probably what we're looking at, right? I do think he will end up with more PGA Tour wins and some more major top tens than Ricky. But again, that's not a shot. 2010's Ricky was a mainstay in the top 10 in the world and consistently in the mix in big events. And essentially just making that comparison in my head to Jeff on the show on Monday, it's like, yeah, this is who Xander is. He's going to win the Players, and then people are going to bet him at majors for the next decade, and he's always going to come up short. And it's like the perfect through line for these careers that have so much in common, even from a skill set standpoint. Like, peak Ricky was just good at everything. He wasn't crazy long off the tee, but he was a very accurate driver and a very good iron player. And you look at Ricky's data from the 2010s, it's so close to Xander, especially that 2014 to 2019 zone. Like, peak Ricky was probably a little bit better of a putter than Xander statistically. He had that one incredible putting season in 2017. And I think when Xander is at his best, he's a little bit more of a threat with his total driving because of his power. But Ricky wasn't short for his day either. The short game stuff is really similar. The approach stuff is really similar. Time to go get your Players, Xander. I can't wait to watch. One more thing on the players. I don't want to harp on this too much. I tweeted about this at the Honda. I didn't tweet about it this week, even though I had some thoughts. I retweeted an Andy Johnson tweet about this. I was really disappointed in the setup again. Now, and I'm been speaking to some people over text about this. Maybe I'll talk about it more on a podcast. We talked about it a little bit with Joseph Almania about some of the reasons why we loved TPC Sawgrass was the threat of the missed fairway penalty and the variance that these holes create because the consequences of a miss at TPC Sawgrass. And I'm really curious to see some of the missed fairway data from this year. We're not really going to get it in comparison to other courses until this season is completed. But I would not be surprised if the missed fairway penalty at TPC Sawgrass was the lowest in its history this year, in terms of the data that we have. Some of the stuff I just wrote down. This is today on Saturday. This is the third easiest round that 17 has played. You know, the famous 17th hole, we mark a hole that's had like five water balls in it all week. Just completely neutered the identity of 17 with the rough bunker. This is the third easiest that 17, the 17th hole, has played in a round since 1984. So in the last 40 years, 120 rounds of golf, professional golf at TPC Sawgrass, this is the third easiest that the 17th hole has ever played. I don't really understand how spin control just isn't a thing that we test on the PGA Tour anymore. This felt, 17 felt, and the social content created from 17, the water ball montage content created from 17, we're just going to give up on that? Like, that's some of the better social content that we get all year from the PGA Tour. And they can't even make a social video on 17 because everybody's hitting to the middle of the green and two putting for par. I mean, it's just, even 16, which to me, 16 is just what has happened to 16 this year. Has been just as negatively affecting the tournament because 16 and people who just watched the players this year probably don't really think of 16 this way. In fact, the two water balls that we got from Maverick McNealy, the wedge, the terrible wedge in the water, and then the one that hit the wood, Matt Fitzpatrick hitting it in the water. Those are two of five balls in the water on 16 all week through three rounds. So 144 guys the first 2 days and 60, 70 guys today. Five water balls on a reachable risk reward par five where the green is right next to the water. You know, this hole used to be a really excellent high leverage hole down the stretch. And now it just feels like, you know, it's a lot softer around that green. So it's a lot easier to get mid to long irons and you know, guys are just cutting the corner now like Wyndham did and having I think Rory had a 9-iron in on this hole. So it's a combination of a lot of factors. It's not just the fact that it's softer around the green. It's not just the fact that there's a rough bumper around the green on 16 as well. But this used to be a hole where guys could go backwards on too. Like now you just watch, and that's the problem with too many holes in professional golf, is the range of outcomes has shrunk, okay? And the range of outcome, even Mav McNealy and Fitzpatrick, when they hit it in the water. Matt McNeely hit his third shot into the water and still made bogey. Okay, Fitzpatrick made a pretty standard par hitting the ball into the water. But that is the problem with too many holes on the PGA Tour, and it's happening to Sawgrass as well, where the range of outcomes is shrinking, right? The range of outcomes on 16 is now basically birdie, eagle, par if you screw things up, where in the past, when that hole played a little bit longer, that back in the day was a hole that not everybody could even reach, okay? That decision on 16 was a decision. Now it's just a long par four. And the range of outcomes on that hole was 3-8, okay? I've been watching the players long enough to see guys make massive numbers on 16. God, even if you play that hole as poorly as possible, like Matt McNeely, the worst you're walking, I mean, he was one of the only bogeys that we saw on 16 all week. And I don't want to hear it about the no wind thing either. One thing that isn't getting talked about in this, they just don't tuck enough pins on the PGA Tour anymore. And I am not always for tucking certain pins, because if you tuck certain pins, it actually can make holes less interesting because guys are just all going to bail in the same place. There were a couple ones that I actually wrote down today where I was shocked at where they put the pins on a Saturday, unless they really just wanted to make the course as easy as possible, which seems to be coming closer and closer to the truth the more that we see these PGA Tour setups in 2024, where they just have this overhanging ethos of we're going to go for more birdies this year. But Sawgrass is actually one of the reasons which makes it one of the best golf courses on tour is because it has some really cool pinnable locations, right? Like there's some really interesting, fun humps and hollows around the green at TPC Sawgrass, some cool pop bunkers, some cool little edges and shelves to put pins on. They're just not using them. And if you're not going to have wind, and if you're going to have soft greens, your last line of defense, the last thing that you can do is put some pins in some spicy spots. Like even on 12, the drivable par four, surprised you didn't put that a little bit closer to the edge of the green. Like you want to keep it up front. I'm okay with that, but just put it right in the middle of the green. The pin position on 8 was shocking to me. Like, that's supposed to be one of the harder holes on the course, and you get a total funnel pin there. So it's like, if you're not making some of these pins tougher on the harder holes, like if you're not giving them tough pins on 8 and 14 and 15, then what are we really doing, guys? I mean, this golf course is been so neutered compared to what TPC Sawgrass was and can be. And I understand that they are at the mercy of weather at times. This weather that, you know, the weather has been perfect these past couple of days, which has been great to watch. And I'm sure incredible for everybody on the grounds, but some of the decisions with the rough around the hazards that lowers the missed fairway penalty, prevents players from hitting the ball in the water on these iconic finishing holes down the stretch, I think it's just bad for them. I don't understand why they don't realize and look at something as simple as the social content that is created around a water ball video montage and the tweets that you get from people when players eject on the 17th hole and we get something crazy on 17. And to be honest with you, and I'm not just saying this because I have a Xander ticket, the most thrilling aspect of the players all week was Wyndham hitting the ball in the water on 17. Okay. That was the first time all week where it actually felt like, oh, wow, trouble's working here. This is a golf shot that still gives pros a lot of fear, that still induces a lot of fear. 17 did not feel like a fearful shot all week. And I mean, it's too late now. I think we'll get hopefully a little bit of a tougher pin tomorrow, but you have a great leaderboard. You have Harmon, Wyndham, the last two major champions, Xander Schauffele, a top five player in the world, top five player on the PGA Tour, and really fun and interesting guys like Sahith and an injured Scotty, which is insane that Scotty is minus 12 right now, lurking. And I'm not much of a huge Mav McNealy guy, but he's really well liked and a pretty good talker. So you actually have a pretty solid situation on the PGA Tour heading into Sunday, where Mav McNealy is really the only pretender. I don't view Sahith as a pretender anymore. Obviously, Scotty, Harmon, Clark, Xander, those are all three of the top 12 guys on the PGA Tour over the last year. Allow them to separate. Let them go out there tomorrow and make it tougher for CT Pan to shoot 67, okay? If you make it a little bit more challenging, the cream is going to continue to rise to the crop or to the top. I understand the concept of, we want a chaser, but I don't really think you need, and a lot of these guys like your CT Pants and Nate Lashley may, and even Mav McNealy may exit stage left on their own, but I think they took it a little bit too far with the pins, and I really hope that they stiffen things up a little bit tomorrow. I guess the course will just one more day of firmness. Hopefully we get some bigger bounces on the greens. Thought we were going to get that today. We didn't really as much. It was pretty cloudy for parts of the day, so the greens haven't really firmed up, I think, the way that we're hoping for. But I hope we get a great one tomorrow. I'm more excited to watch this final round than I have been in quite some time. This year on the PGA Tour, probably. So let's take a quick break and then talk a little bit about the Valspar.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Valspar Championship. Decent field. We're getting Xander and Cantlay. Now, who knows if Xander WDs, we're getting Harmon too. Who knows if either of them WD if they end up winning the players. I think there's a pretty decent chance that they still play, even if one of them wins the players, because I think The schedule is so specific now leading into the Masters. Like, these guys have been thinking about their schedule leading into the Masters, and particularly attempting to peak at the right time. So everything is incredibly calculated. And I understand the concept of a lot of these guys wanting to get one more competitive rep in before the Masters, whether that is Valspar, Houston, or Valero. Now, interestingly enough, I actually think that Innisbrook is the least comparative course to the Masters compared to TPC San Antonio and Houston. I know it's kind of a low bar, but at least in Houston, you get these firm Tom Doak greens with some very interesting green complexes. But I thought we were going to get Fleetwood here. He was in the initial field. He's not there. It looks like we're going to get Xander, Cantlay, Finau, JT. This might be the last time that we see JT before the Masters. I would be pretty surprised if he played Houston or Valero. Tony Finau, we may end up seeing him in Houston as well. He's a former champion at Houston. Sahith was also supposed to play this tournament, and he withdrew. So maybe that means we get him in Houston. Sungjae, Eric Cole, Keegan Bradley, Cameron Young, Sungjae M, Minwoo Lee, Keith Mitchell, I suppose. It's not great. But this golf course, Copperhead course at Innisbrook, it was designed in 1971 by Larry Packard with the 2015 restoration after Jordan Spieth's victory. It's a Florida course. I'm actually going to be in the Tampa area Valspar weekend at Stream Song, so I don't think we will head out to Innisbrook to check it out for any of the days. We'll be busy playing our own golf at Stream Song, but I will be in the area, so maybe I'll be able to report on some weather stuff a little bit. I think Stream Song is within an hour away from where Valspar is, but par 71, 7,340 yards. Water comes into play on 9 holes. Fairways are Celebration Bermuda grass overseeded with ryegrass, measuring just 24 yards wide on average. These are very narrow fairways. The rough is Celebration Bermuda grass overseeded with ryegrass. Greens measure 5,822 square feet, feature Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass with a Poa trivialis overseed, and the same type of overseeded Bermuda greens that we get at the Players in Phoenix, American Express, TPC San Antonio has these greens as well, Heritage. Firmness of turf and wind conditions is going to be a major factor here. So, and that's why I think the weather is so important, and it's going to be so important to monitor the weather this week and the firmness of the turf. So, for example, in 2019 and 2018, the Paul Casey years, Innisbrook played as a top five toughest course on the PGA Tour. And then the two Sam Burns years, it played middle of the pack in terms of difficulty. Okay, and if you're asking me, which I'm guessing if it's going to be the Paul Casey top five years or the Sam Burns middle of the pack, well, the way things are trending on the PGA Tour this year, you could probably assume where I'm going. Although, you never know. Valspar kind of reverted to form last year with the Taylor Moore year. It was pretty damn tough. And hasn't been a lot of rain. There's a lot of rain leading into the Players, but I don't think there's going to be much rain in between the Players and when the Valspar starts hitting that part of Florida. So hopefully we'll get a lot firmer of a golf course that we saw at TPC Sawgrass. Last year it played as the 10th toughest course on tour, with more wind and the course really allowing itself to bake out. So be sure to monitor wind and turf conditions. Florida has definitely gotten more rain this year than it did last year. So I'm still a little pessimistic that we will see it play as hard as it did last year, as firm as it did last year. But conditions on this course play a major factor. Last year, it played two strokes harder than it did the prior year because we got more wind and the course was more baked out. And under these conditions. Valspar is an incredibly tough tee to green golf course. Any golf course that falls in the 55% zone for driving accuracy and greens and regulation percentage is going to be one of the toughest courses from tee to green that we see on tour. Those are Bay Hill numbers. And, you know, in terms of the golf course itself, Valspar is pretty unique in the sense that it features five par threes and four par fives. The par threes are long and difficult. All five of the par threes measure over 195 yards, which gives a lot of credence this week to long iron play. So if you're wondering why this is such a long iron intensive course, look no further than the five par threes, which all measure over 195 yards. They rank as the fifth toughest set of par threes on tour and all play over par. The par fours are no pushover either. None of them play under 380 yards, but none of them play over 475 yards either. And the par fives, of course, is where you need to get it done, as they play as the four easiest holes on the course, and they are the only four holes on the course that feature over a 20% birdie rate. I'm going to keep the in-depth stuff on the course relatively brief, because I already went kind of long talking about the players, and I want to talk about some of the guys that I tentatively like this week, although I'm going to have a much clearer picture of this after Sunday wraps up at the Players, because pretty much all the guys, most of the guys you're going to want to bet this week either played the Players or, well, some of them missed the cut at the Players, so you have some data of what they were up to at TPC Sawgrass. But if I was to encapsulate why Innisbrook is so hard, is because this is a placement golf course where the second shot is long, right? So what do I mean by that? It's not a golf course that you can really overpower off the tee. It's a golf course where a lot of the times, I mean, you can hit more driver here. You know, all these golf courses are trending towards more driver heavy. But it's not a golf course where you can hit less than driver and have a bunch of wedges. So you have these decisions where you can try and weave a driver into some of these spots, into some of these super narrow, firm fairways, or you can take your medicine and take less than driver. But the price that you have to pay for taking less than driver is long approach shots, right? So it's one of those very rare, unique golf courses that kind of asks you to club down a little bit, but you're going to have a lot of mid to long irons. It's really not a typical Florida course. It's like the last three Florida courses that we played, PGA National, Bay Hill, TPC Sawgrass, all those rank top 10 in penalty strokes per round and feature a ton of water in play. Valspar is bottom 10 in penalty strokes per round and far more of a depth by 1,000 paper cuts course. And if I was to sum up what I'm looking for off the tee here, I think it's a really good week to look at. I would not call this a full club down course, but the fairways are narrow. It's tree lined. The rough is thick, and there's a lot of curve to these holes. So it's absolutely a placement course. So I think it's a good week to look at like a combination of driving accuracy and good drive percentage, right? Because while it is a tough course off the tee, it's not a course where there is some tremendous correlation between great drivers of the ball winning here. Sam Burns can be really shaky off the tee at times, and he's won at this golf course losing strokes off the tee. And that's because I think a lot of players just know to take their medicine off the tee and keep the ball in play, which is why I think you want to identify guys here. Like, I don't think you need to be some elite driver of the ball here. I don't think you need to be some hyper, hyper accurate driver of the ball here either. I think you want to identify guys that are smart off the tee, that play well off the tee on placement golf courses, that know what to do off the tee, that play well off the tee at golf courses like Wyndham or at Sedgefield, that play well off the tee on golf courses like Eastlake, these golf courses where there's not a lot of hazards in play off the tee, but there's a penalty for being in the rough. The fairways are narrow, and you kind of just have to figure out what to do on every hole. I don't love Innisbrook as a golf course, but if I'm putting my optimist hat on the reasons why Innisbrook is good, particularly while it's baked out, is because I think there are a lot of styles that you can deploy off the tee here. And ultimately, like, I have a standard weight on off the tee because there's just been so many examples of guys being able to club down and figure it out. But I think the main thing is you want to stay out of the trees, right? It's six out of 45 courses in non-rough penalty, 19th out of 45 courses in total miss fairway penalty. So, you know. And then on approach, long irons. We're talking over 52% of approach shots from over 175 yards, and greens in regulation percentage last year was just 55%. That's 9% below tour average. Last year, it featured the third toughest greens to hit on the PGA Tour. So this is a ball strikers course through and through, and particularly long irons. Like, if I am looking at one specific underlying skill here, more important than anything you do off the tee, I think guys like Taylor Moore and Sam Burns, not particularly accurate drivers of the ball, you can figure out what to do and club down and get away with stuff. You can't get away without being a great long iron player, or we'll talk about the putting in a second, right? But long iron play is absolutely, absolutely crucial here. And then around the green play, around the green always gets tougher when things firm up around the greens. But in terms of the undulation on these greens are pretty flat, like most golf courses in Florida. And so the statistically easiest aspect of Innisbrook is what you do once you get around the greens, right? 29th out of 45 courses in around the green difficulty, 37th from the fairway, 29th from the rough, 21st from the bunkers. So around the green is important here simply on the basis that we have such a low greens in regulation percentage, but the actual degree of difficulty of the short game shots that we will see at Valspar, not incredibly difficult. These greens, like I said, not particularly undulating, and they can get very fast if it gets firm and baked out, but the green side surrounds, not particularly difficult either. And then putting, kind of middle of the pack. I've talked about this many times as well, about how these overseeded greens that take the grain out of putting just make putting so much easier, and it's why we see worse putters perform so well at golf courses like Phoenix, Amex. These have the same greens at the Players. I found the putting at Sawgrass this week to be incredibly easy as well. 19th in putting difficulty inside 5 feet, 11th from 5 to 15 feet, 21st greater than 15 feet. So the challenge of Innisbrook is tee to green. Once you get on and around the greens, the course is easier. And I have a below average weight on putting this week, as while we have seen a bunch of elite putters like Sam Burns succeed here, you know, keep in mind that the 2 years that Sam Burns won, because I still personally believe that Burns is more of an easy scoring conditions guy than a tougher scoring conditions guy until he starts proving it to us in major championships. Look at, you know, Sam Burns went nuts today on a very soft Players Championship setup, but the second that things got really spicy at Bay Hill, he kind of wilted. So keep in mind that the two Burns years played like two strokes easier than the Taylor Moore year last year, and Burns still played well last year, but I think that his path to victory is a little bit tougher when we get firmer and tougher conditions. So I think looking at the weather this week, looking at turf conditions and looking at the wind, I think it changes the player profile. I think that you want a little bit on this course. Like, if we get closer to that middle of the pack test, you know, 15, 17 under, more emphasis on putting, right? If we get something closer to the Taylor Moore or the Paul Casey years, Paul Casey, like one of the best long iron players of the last 5 years. I know that's crazy to say now because we don't pay much attention to Paul Casey anymore, but this was a perfect golf course for Paul Casey because he was such a precise long iron player. And if we get closer to, I'm kind of playing it towards the middle. I have a couple opt-outs and hedges in my model in terms of like things that I would tweak if it, if I start to feel it gets a little bit harder, things that I would tweak if I think it's going to play a little bit easier. We'll be talking about all that stuff in the Discord all week. I'll be in the Tampa area all week. You know, I'll have a standard weight on putting, but to me, this is far more of a tee to green test if we get anything like what we got last year with Taylor Moore. Oddly enough, despite the fact that four of the last five Valspars have been won by the same two players, this is not a golf course that features a tremendously high correlation of course history, and that surprises me a little bit. It's because it's not a golf course with a lot of water. It's not a golf course that historically has a lot of putting variance. It is a very low greens and regulation percentage. So you would actually expect that based on the specs that this is the perfect course history correlation course, but that just hasn't been the case. I would suppose there isn't really a ton of nuance to these green complexes, but I actually think it's a, as I've talked about, an underratedly strategic course off the tee. So got a standard weight on course history here, but if you look at the best players in course history here, minimum eight rounds, last decade, Burns, Neesmith, Riley, Fleetwood, Spieth, Furyk, JT, Sungjae, Noren, Kuchar. It's a little bit of everything, right? Balance, well-rounded skill set, some great short game guys in there, some great iron players in there, some great putters in there, a lot of accurate drivers off the tee in there. And then in terms of comp courses, I think the golf course that I like the most is Eastlake because you've got very narrow fairways, thicker rough, not a tremendous amount of water. It's really more of a death by a thousand paper cuts course, and it's that rare type of driving accuracy in mid to long irons course. So I think there's a lot of Eastlake in this golf course. I know Sedgefield is a little bit easier than Innisbrook and features more middle to short irons, but Sedgefield is another course that sneakily the last couple of years can get a little bit more baked out, you know, highly emphasizes accuracy and placement off the tee and sneakily features some firmer Bermuda greens, Carolina golf course, a little bit of Sawgrass and TPC Southwind as well, although this isn't your water heavy golf course. This isn't your typical Florida golf course. So like a lot of those filters that I, and my full model is up on the rabbit hole already, but a lot of those Florida and water heavy and giant miss fairway penalty, it's more of a, you know, birdie or better percentage from the rough because guys are going to be in the rough so much, like scrambling on golf course with low greens and regulation percentage, like scrambling out of the rough. Like it's more of a, like I said, not to overuse the term, but it's this death by a thousand paper cuts course where there's not as much giant variance in the form of hazards, but it's just kind of a golf course that could break you down step by step. And it's just hard in totality, right? Just a lot of pars and bogeys. And you have these four birdie opportunities with the par fives, and none of the par threes are birdie opportunities. Most of the par fours are a lot harder. It's not like a drivable par four or anything like that. So I put all this together in my model, and whew, I mean, I'll run through the top 20 quickly. Just some pretty disgusting stuff, and I'm going to tweak a lot more things once I get the players' data in here. But this was one of the weeks, like there's nobody I want to really spotlight here the way that, you know, I was so excited to talk about Corey Connors last week, or so excited to talk about Ludwig or Victor Hovland at Bay Hill, or like so excited to talk about Davis Thompson at Mexico, or Wyndham in the beginning of the year at Pebble and Amex. Like there's not a guy this week that is jumping out to me is like, okay, this is the first thing that I'm going to do on Monday morning. But let's run through the top 20 in my model real quick, and we'll give some quick thoughts and then I'll get out of here. Number one, Lucas Glover. Ugh. He was one of the few guys that murdered me this week. Lucas Glover and Billy Horschel. Just a very demanding tee to green test in terms of accuracy off the tee and mid to long iron play. Like, why do you think Lucas Glover won at Sedgefield and at Memphis? You know, like these southeastern Bermuda golf courses with thicker rough that emphasize placement off the tee and approach play are really perfect for Lucas Glover. I think that's going to, I mean, he's coming off, the ball striking was fine in the missed cut. He came very close on Friday. I would imagine that when I run the players' numbers in this, some things are going to change a little bit as well. Eric Cole, number two. Okay. Maybe a good bounce back spot for Eric Cole. Number three, Xander. He's probably looking at number one once we get the player stuff put in, but I'm not sure how I feel about going to the top of the board this week, because especially guys that contended at the players, like statistically, we'll get to Brian Harman in a second. Xander and Brian Harman are playing the best golf right now and fit this course incredibly well, but the Sunday at the players, good or bad, is going to take a lot out of them. And it's Masters mode for these guys, right? Like some of the guys that we'll talk about as we get down the model, Sam Ryder, Aaron Rye, another great Aaron Rye course, Ryan Moore, who's playing well at the players. Good Ryan Moore course. God, this is ugly. Those type of guys are going to, I think, view the Valspar maybe a little bit differently. In terms of what it means to them, those guys that don't have an invite already to the Masters, as opposed to, you know, Xander and Cantlay and Harman now, I would suppose. Finau, JT, viewing this a little bit more as a tune-up doesn't mean that they don't want to win. Doesn't mean that I may not end up betting one of those guys. But Xander, Ryder, Rye, Ryan Moore, Tony Finau, he's been pretty good at Sawgrass this week. I played him this week and he's fine. He's playing. He's starting to play some better golf. Justin Thomas, number eight, man. You know, in fairness to JT, if you look at his numbers, he hit his irons really well at the players. So the irons are there. It's just his putting and the off the tee was meh, but the putting was really, really horrendous for him at Sawgrass. So is this a good bounce back spot for JT on a golf course that JT's been great here? Great, great, great at this golf course. Put it this way, as disgusting as it is, as embarrassed as I am about my pick of JT, not just at Sawgrass, but also at Riviera. Right. So JT fooled me twice this year. Right. If we're going to talk about the good, we got to be accountable at the bad. And I have made two terrible JT bets this year at Riviera and at the Players Championship. I thought both were good numbers, but terrible, terrible JT fools. Yeah. Okay. I still, maybe I'm being stubborn, I still think it's coming pretty soon. What I saw from him, I was traveling for most of his Friday round, but from what I saw looking at the numbers, like, he is hitting the ball very well right now, still, even in a missed cut. And he's had four top 12 finishes and six starts this year. The only flip side to that is those other two starts were missed cuts in big events. But I like the fact that he at least showed that he could do it on a tough golf course at Bay Hill. So yeah, I would say and he needs it. He needs this. JT needs this win. It's not like Xander and Cantlay or Finau are lighting the world on fire with the amount of golf tournaments that they're winning right now. But like, Come on, JT. It's been 2 years. 2 years since you've won. You won 14 times. And now you hit your prime, right? You're like 30 years old and you haven't won in 2 years. So JT's interesting. Tom Kim, no idea what's going on there. No idea what's going on. He withdrew after 8 holes of the Players. If Tom Kim was healthy and playing a little bit better, I think it'd be a really good golf course for him. He's won at Sedgefield. He's played well in Memphis before, but no idea what to do with Tom Kim right now. Doug Kim, how long does he keep this going? Doug Kim just keeps playing amazing golf. This is his what? I mean, he's T12 heading into Sunday at the Players. We'll see what he does on Sunday. This is his fifth, sixth, solid performance in a row. Now he's doing it in better fields, tougher golf courses. 11, Davis Thompson, who I like a lot this week. We're going to go back. I just believe in that guy. 12, Brian Harman. 13, Patrick Cantlay. Yeah, I've been happy to hop off the Cantlay thing after Riviera the last 2 weeks. I test. Same thing. I couldn't get back to Vec after I screwed that one up at API, but just the irons are not there. There's a few details off with Cantlay this year. He's not sharp enough on approach. He's not hitting enough greens, and he's not making enough putts to save himself. And he's just too loose with the irons. I think, the good version of Cantlay could play incredibly well at this golf course, but I haven't looked at any of his numbers from the Players or seen him. He hasn't been on TV at all at the Players. I haven't watched any of him at the Players. But it's a little off right now. So hopefully this is a week where Xander's kind of proven that he's in great form this year. Hopefully this is a week where JT, Cantlay, and Finau really prove it. Brendan Todd, Christian Bezuidenhout, Nick Taylor. God, Nick Taylor killed me today. Hopefully he can have a good Sunday. Sung J.M., I think he's playing a little bit better. I didn't play him at the Players, but I think he's playing a little bit better. Matt Kuchar, Sam Burns. Sam Burns going to win here 3 times in 4 years. It's not a great field. He played amazing today at the Players. I could certainly see Sam Burns hot take, playing well here again at the golf course that he plays well every single year. That is probably my sign to wrap things up. As of now, I'm going to make a lot of my decisions on Sunday afternoon once I get the final Players results, because nobody is really speaking to me right now on this Valspar board. So hop into the Discord this week. Great week to do it. Valspar Championship. I'll be there down in Florida this week. I get back from Mexico on Monday evening, I believe, and fly into Florida the next day. So rumpyersports.com, code Andy, if you want to hop in that Discord, if you want to talk golf with us, sweat golf with us 24/7. It's best Discord community. We're talking and sweating golf in there all day. That's where I post all of my thoughts that, don't make it to podcasts and Twitters. I'm just chopping it up in the golf streets there all day. So rumpyersports.com, code Andy for that. All the stats and data. If you want to look at my full model, you can get that on the rabbit hole. Betsperts, Inside Golf is your code for that. Good luck, Xander. Hoping for the best. Wouldn't count on it. Trust Wyndham and Brian Harman more, but hoping that this is Xander's turn. It feels a little bit like Xander's turn, so I'm hoping it's Xander's turn. Best of luck with your bets the rest of the weekend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will see you back on this podcast feed Tuesday morning. Cheers.